When it comes to weight management, we tend to focus on what we eat, but Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat. That's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up today.
And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bench with Bubba, episode 591. Going to recap your week 9 fab, talk about some interesting players from May and just in general, and much, much more. You can find me on Twitter at BDintric. My guest, as usual, to start the week on Twitter at Mike_Kurland. Mike, how are we doing today?
I'm fantastic, buddy. I'm just full of joy and hatred and anger. Oh, sorry. That went off the rails real quick. I have Cedric Mullins, and I watched him limp off after trying to leg out an infield hit. So, of course, you know, my best team, one of my top 5-round picks, it sucks. And honestly, there's a good chance. I'm almost guaranteeing an IL stint, I would guess it. I'm no doctor. So I'm hopeful for 2 to 4 weeks, just given the fact it's most likely a soft tissue injury of sorts. So we'll see, but we need more information. We can't assume anything right now.
Yeah, I'm reading quotes here from one of the beat reporters from Baltimore. Brandon Hyde said Cedric Mullins has a right abductor / groin strain. It's the last thing you want to see, Hyde said. Ryan McKenna said Cedric is one of our biggest pieces of the team and one of the biggest drivers of this winning this year and this season. It's going to be a loss for our team. So. Yeah, not good. Not good
where
at
did,
all.
Wait. That came out? I'm so confused.
Yeah, already? Nathan Ruiz. They don't know exactly what it is. They do MRI to get the severity of the injury, but they're basically saying they already know it's not going to be great, and he's going to miss some time. So, yes, IL stint coming. That is a given. Just a matter of time is the question at hand. Hopefully not long, especially because it's the groin. Like, is it going to affect his running when he gets back? Yada, yada, yada. So I guess we'll kick it off with this because we kind of talked about it off the air. Mike, how do you plan on replacing Cedric Mullins on your team?
You don't. You do the best you can in terms of targeting maybe the stat he offers the most of. Obviously, you don't replace a Cedric Mullins. You don't just find a guy who can go 20-40 off the waiver wire in week 10 of fantasy. And it's easier in 10-teamers. Obviously, 12s, it's not likely. And then 15s, where I have him, is really, really unlikely to find anything off the waiver wire that's going to do it. Obviously, if I get aggressive with like a Royce Lewis type, that would be my best bet. But the issue is I need outfield. My outfield's already shallow. It's already dealing with other issues in terms of just some of my missed picks have been outfielders. Some of my and now the injuries, obviously being an outfielder, it's not ideal. So in all reality, there is no replacing them. But at the end of the day, I'll figure it out. I mean, if I wanted to just lay over and die, turn over and die, that wouldn't be any fun, right? That wouldn't help me out any. So I have a really good team. I figured I could just honestly, I'll piece it together. You got to just kind of stay hot, get lucky with the streamers. Maybe if Akil Baddoo becomes a thing, he's been decent. He went 1-for-3 again today. He actually stayed in instead of getting pinch hit 4 against a lot of these. So maybe some of those platoon issues are lifting. There's always an outfield is the easiest position to find, I feel like, in season at least. So far, at least it's been my experience. So we'll see how it goes. Again, there is no replacing a Cedric Mullins. I just got to do my best in terms of managing the skill set that I lost from him and most likely what I'm going to need the most. Like, say, right now, I think stolen base is obviously one of his bigger – what he offers the most of. So if I can go out and find someone who could be decent with batting average while giving me stolen bases, I think that'll help balance out my roster the most, considering that's kind of what I needed from him the most with everything else that he offered being kind of extra, so to speak. So there's no replacing a Cedric Mullins, but there is replacing the stats that he offers one way or another. You just got to kind of have to pick the right parts and a little luck involved as well.
Yeah, just looking at 12-team OCs, for instance, I know you're doing 15, so it's going to be even deeper for you. But for some of the listeners, if you're looking for potential guys in an OC format, like Luke Raley, 67% rostered. He's a name we'll talk about later in the show. But like Nick Prado's 43%. Nolan Jones, who we'll talk about, is 33%. He's still widely available. Some other guys you could look at would be like Trey Mancini's actually playing, which is weird. But Eddie Rosario is in there a lot against righties. Gavin Sheets, depending on that whole mess. You mentioned Akil Baddoo. Max Kepler's back. He's only 12% rostered. So, yeah, just check out your wire. It's murky waters. One guy I wrote up this past week, Kerlin, that I don't know if you had a chance to look at or not, was Oscar Mercado, because he's actually playing and playing decently for the Cardinals right now.
Well, he would be very light in terms of offering the stolen bases at the very least, because he is running, and we did see Lars Nootbaar also leave with an injury today. Yep. So he does become an interesting option if you're chasing stolen bases. Again, going back to what you're looking for based off of what you need here, because again, there is no replacing him stat for stat. I'm looking in 15s right now, and I don't see it. Like, Mercado is an actual like option. Sheets is an actual option, but he's owned in 70% of main events. Joey Weimer, he's kind of available 77% of main events. So it's like, we're talking, these are deeper formats, obviously, but these are guys that I just mentioned, guys that are going to be like potential drains in batting average and lower in the lineup. So you're not getting the runs and RBI potential either. It's frustrating. Pavin Smith does lead off, but he's been pretty bad, 45% rostered in 15s in main events. So again, I'm gonna have my work cut out for me. There is no direct replacement. I've said that like 15 times, but it's just one of those things. Like, what else am I gonna say? It is what it is. You know, I gotta get lucky here. I gotta just make the right moves. I've been doing all right so far. So I'd like to think I could maybe figure it out, but I can't guarantee that. I'm hopeful though.
with this happening, you might get Kyle Stowers called back up.
I'm not doing it again.
Because I remember you talked about him before.
I was excited because he was a name that might come up eventually that could be interesting is Sal Frelick, kind of a similar skill set. If he come, I know he's. I don't know if he's
injury.
I'll say, is he back from the injury yet? He's not showing up on the IL here. It's weird.
Yeah, it was a long injury, at least a month to 2 months.
I was like 4 to 8 weeks or something like that, right? Yeah. 4 to 8 weeks or something like that. Yeah, so, but it's just those, that's the type of guy. It's like, but again, it goes back to showing you like, okay, cool, outfield isn't so shallow. Like, outfield's not too shallow. It's shallow for my roster, but I feel like, okay, there's a couple names I can go out of my way to get if I need just stolen bases. I'm actually feeling optimistic the more I look at the waiver wire, so we'll see. But anyway, we can move on from there. It is what it is. If I can harp on it, or I can... My big thing is I can sit here and harp on it, and sure, I need a day to get over it usually, but by tomorrow I'll be fine, and I'll be looking at the waiver wire thinking, okay, what's my next move? Because being upset about it, it's not going to win me my league. I got to move on, look forward, and realize it's just another piece to the puzzle I got to figure out. Now he does join Adames and Woodruff on my bench for the rest of the week, but at least Adames is short term. Woodruff is trending up hopefully by the end of the month or early July, so I'm trying to hold on to those guys. But yeah, it is what it is. We'll move forward. We'll figure it out.
We will see how it goes. Let's talk about some kind of game theory discussions. We did a couple weeks ago. You brought up another good one here, and it kind of correlates with things we've talked about the last few weeks about like stashing and bench streamers and whatnot we've talked about. So one of the questions you mentioned, and it comes into play on like how we add drop guys and players we look at for the week, and it's a big picture thing, but the idea of, you know, if you add a player, do you have to start him right away? Like in Tout Wars, you do. Like that's just the way it works. So that's kind of a bummer, but it also kind of hinders you from making just all out crazy moves. But like NFBC, other formats, Yahoo's, ESPN's, normal leagues, you don't have to start guys right away. So, what's your theory on this? Like when you add a guy, are you initially trying to start him? Because like I know my thoughts, and when we talk about guys we picked up this week, I wasn't even planning on starting a couple guys. I was just adding them for cheap. So what's your thoughts on this?
And that's kind of where I am. I like to obviously start. I don't go after a guy with the idea of not starting them, but you don't want to force it. I mean, you're not every team that like, sometimes you go out and grab a player just because of upside or because you want to see where it goes. But I was referring in my head, I was like thinking about it from a deeper league perspective, because obviously the deeper the format, the more likely you are to need, quote unquote, need the player that you're going after. So at the end of the day, I just wanted to kind of just discuss that, like, it's not something you need to always do. Like an example for me is that Jesus Sanchez, I added him this week with the idea of playing him, but just not the first half of the week. He's supposed to be activated tomorrow. Everybody's probably, you know, there's a lot of people excited to start him. I'm excited to get him back. And but it's one of those things where if you look at the matchups, he has two lefties and a righty, and he was platooning before going down. I don't see why the platoon would go away all of a sudden. So it is what it is. Like, I'm not going to just plug him in blindly. So just know that if you add a guy, there's a reason why you added them, but you don't necessarily need to plug them in right away. I know it's kind of obvious to a lot of people, but I feel like I just see stuff on Twitter, and it was kind of just triggered the thought of, like, maybe we should just mention that. Maybe just keep that in mind. Like, just don't feel like you have to start them over somebody else. Like, okay, I picked this guy up. I got to get him in my lineup. Do you, though? Just see where it goes. Do you really? Like, it's just, you pick them up for a reason. Sometimes just stashing them is fine. Or, heck, in my situation, now if I obviously come Thursday, if I had no other options, I would be plugging them in regardless, just for the depth purposes. But sometimes you just got to see where things go. You don't always have to just automatically start somebody you go out of your way to add. Yeah. Even if you're excited about them, you got to be smart is kind of also part of it too. I don't want to say, like, okay, you obviously added them to start them, but if the matchups don't make sense, or if it's a really tough matchup and it's like him versus other fringe guy that you kind of have in your roster, and you're kind of sick of the fringe guy, but the fringe guy has the better matchups and the more likely path to playing time, you still should start the other guy, even though you're more excited about the guy you added, because it just makes sense. You want to follow that process of what, you know, of what you normally do. Don't alter your process to fit this guy in your lineup that doesn't fit otherwise.
Yep, I totally agree. And that's, like I said, it'll become a real topic of conversation when we talk about some guys I added this week. I had Jesus Sanchez in a lot of bids. He was not my top guy, but I wanted to get him if I could for the reasons you're mentioning. There's a lot of pitchers I do that with now. With as bad as pitching has been, like, I'm starting to speculate on certain guys that, like, I wrote up Luke Weaver. Like, I know you tweeted out something about his pitch mix change and the changeup and everything. I've never been a Luke Weaver guy, but I'm willing to acknowledge that maybe there's a change here. So let's get him for a buck or two and stash him. And if it works again this week, I got a guy, and that's worth it for me. Stuff along those lines. Cause if he pitches well this week, he has two starts next week and he's going to go for at least 20, 30 bucks. And, like, if I can get him for two now, cool, we're in. Especially in a world where, unlike you, who actually has a decent amount of fab left, most of us are dwindling in the fab department. So those kind of spec bids are going to be even more important as we keep running through all this. So it is definitely a thing. And ideally, if you're adding a guy, you have to start right away. He's not going to be like a cheap pickup most of the time, because you have a necessity. So you're going to make sure you get them, or they're a hot name, or they're flourishing of some sort. Like prospect, like Ellie De La Cruz, if you added him, you're probably starting him right away type situation, where when you're going to get your Akil Badu's, your Jesus Sanchez's, maybe you went and got an Owen Miller last week or something, and you're not starting them. And that's just kind of the reality of the situation. That's kind of where I think our conversations, you don't have to start these guys. You can speculate, see how it goes. It makes it an easier drop also when they're not expensive. So it's kind of a whole theory type play for sure.
Yeah.
What were you going to say?
No, I'm just sad right now. Let's go. Okay. I'm trying to power through this.
Kind of on the idea of, do you have to start a guy right away and whatnot, is the streaming thing. And you can get cheap streamers too. So if they're a streamer, you're probably starting them right away. That's kind of how that goes. What do you use to look for streamers? Like, I look at matchups. I look at, like, recent form, I guess, potential playing time, kind of a lot of the things you mentioned as options here. It's kind of a group of things. I'm not getting a guy that's only going to play three games in the week and, you know, he's hitting a buck 40. I'm not even going to think about streaming those type of dudes. But, you know, Gavin Sheets is a popular one, and it worked one week and it didn't work the second week. We've talked about Jake Bowers on this show a few times. There's going to be good. There's going to be bad. It's more the process. So what's your process in finding the streamers?
And the reason, and I just want to bring this up as what triggered the thought, was I saw, again, more discourse on Twitter. So Twitter discourse, keep it up, guys. You're giving me material to want to speak about. It was the fact that just people are talking about, you know, weekly when it comes to hitters, projections and stuff. And I'm like, I like the idea of incorporating it. I'm not trying to alter my process right now, but I think just because I saw how effective incorporating projections were in my draft prep, I kind of want to start maybe next year incorporating it. That's what made me think. I'm like, well, what do I do currently? So when it comes to hitters, it's like, you know, the hitter streamer chart, which, you know, shameless plug, but we had it created for the GTE Patreon for reasons, because it kind of hits on a lot of these things. It breaks down your Monday through Thursday lineups, your Friday through Saturday, and then as a whole weekly, how many matchups is a player seeing, is a player getting? You know, obviously you're looking at each team five to seven games a week. From there, you're breaking it down even more. Lefty, righty splits. How many lefties, how many righties do they get? From there, you go to your Monday through Thursday period, Friday through Saturday period, Sunday period, sorry. And you're looking at lefty, righty matchups within said period. And then from there, you're starting to take notes. You go through what I do for the notes for that specific chart is I go through every single team's last 14 days and sometimes last seven, depending on certain players and when they start starting the lineup, et cetera, whatever. It doesn't matter. I find trends is the point. And I kind of highlight who's running hot, running cold. I know cold streaks and hot streaks aren't necessarily a thing you can quantify, I feel like, but they are a thing that people should consider, in my opinion, at least what I consider when I start making these ads. So I kind of go through this process of, okay, so I want this player. When am I going to use them? Okay, cool. I can use them all week because there's six out of seven righties. Or, oh, like Jesus Sanchez. I'm like, I got him. I know I'm not starting him Monday through Thursday with two out of three being lefties, but now he gets that Oakland series with three righties over the weekend. That's a must start for me. So I understand all this for every single player I put a bid in for. And I make sure that I have a plan for them when I acquire them, not only a future outlook, but like, what are they going to do for me right now? And then of course, based on how I view them in general, in terms of their potential usage for this team, will also dictate if I bid a lot or a little. Is this a streamer? Is this guy see for like a week or two, see what go and go from there? Like Akil Badu was kind of like, all right, I liked what I saw beyond just the matchups coming up. He was starting to, it was the fact that he was walking more than striking out, I think, over the 2 week period. I was like, let me see where this goes. So I added him. And of course he had the matchups. And now from there, it's like, okay, I'm just going to hold and I'm plugging him back in again this week. And it's just but that process of trying to exploit matchups and handedness and all the above. And then you can go a step further. Obviously, there's another thing on the chart that's like you can look into relief pitchers for those teams. And I think it's all set up for the last three starts or starters that like a put. And And then don't forget the opposing starters that they're facing. So we have a system that spits out a grade based on the last three starts for each opposing start. It's an in-depth process that's all in the chart. So this chart just does all this work for me.
Does it all for you. Spits it right out. It's a beautiful thing.
And then I go over to the RP the spot. You can click on that and it'll show you the opposing team RP stats for the schedule too. So you'll know this is what their relief pitchers have been up to for the last, I think, 21 days maybe we did, or 14 days. Either way, it's giving you a recent look, just a snapshot of the recent production from relief pitchers as well. So you're getting an idea of you're really getting into the nitty gritty of it. And that's what I do for every single hitter, because I look through this for my teams when I go out after a guy, when I look for who to stream, when I'm stuck between two players. This whole long process, I'm sorry if I'm rambling, but it's just so much I put into my decision making. And then sometimes after all that, I'll still go with my gut sometimes, but I try not to go with my gut. I try to leave it up to what makes sense on paper as I go through this whole process.
No, it makes a ton of sense.
Sorry.
No, but the chart, I was just making sure you're done. The chart,
I don't know if I'm done.
But the chart is it's shameless plugging, but the fact all that stuff you mentioned just is right there without you having to really dig into it. It's all just freaking boom, 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 boom. We've had members say like this is worth the price of admission itself. And again, I'm not trying to like make an advertisement, but it makes it pretty darn awesome. Then you throw like Michael's SP streaming thing in there. Jorge's relief pitching is going to be pretty sweet too, it sounds like. So there's a lot of cool stuff. The DFS one, I got a lot of work to do on that because there's a lot going on that chart that I kind of want to consolidate somewhere along the line, but we'll get there eventually. But it's the streaming thing, and it's a great conversation. People might be annoyed by it. They might be bored with it. I don't know. But
we're going to get to player talk.
It's a great conversation because especially this time of the year, like I say, we're trying to save money, but we need to be able to keep getting the stats, and then we're getting injuries. Like said, Mullins goes down. I'm not trying to harp on that, but we got to find guys. Maybe you don't find one guy for the entire time he's out. Maybe you stream someone every week in that position. That's my point. And that's where this comes into play. Like, hey, go get so-and-so. And the beauty of these charts is it kind of can give you a look ahead. Like, hey, go grab this guy for next week or stuff like that. Like things along those scenarios that'll kind of point you in the right direction to, I've mentioned it a lot when I do like my pitching ads. I did the show with Toby. I try to grab two start guys a week early if I have roster space. Like I had Brandon Belak on my roster last week for this week. I got him for like $6 last week. He was going everywhere for like $20 to $30 pretty much. And like it doesn't sound like a lot, but that adds up in the end of the season in a big, big way. So just little things like that can go very, very far in the grand scheme of things.
Oh, I'm the same way, but I've gotten to a point now where I make a point to look at the next four starts for starting pitchers because I want to see, is it just a two-step? Like, even if I like what you mentioned, I grab them a week early. That's kind of what we have to do these days to get ahead to really save money. But now a step further is look at their next four starts. Beyond that two-step, do they continue to project out for a really favorable schedule? And that's, I know it changes. That's why I only do four, because even the four starts, you're still – risking, you know, there's a lot of changes, injuries, push back a day for rest, what have you, all that good stuff. But I like to get an idea like, okay, maybe I value this guy, but maybe like I'm torn between two guys. This guy has Toronto and at New York on the schedule. This guy has Pittsburgh at Detroit. And it's like, well, that made my decision for me. I like this guy that much, that this guy gets the little nod. And that could be the difference between who you end up with and who ends up being more valuable for you beyond that two-start week even. And with hitters, I like to look at 7 days ahead, obviously, but I like to look at up to 14 days for the schedule. But when it comes to matchups in terms of like handedness, so much changes. I only look 7 days ahead for that. And I pick but I am very big on streaming week to week. I realize that I don't hold on more than I have to. I try to be pretty cutthroat with the turnover on the streamer types, because as you mentioned, I'm trying to catch lightning in a bottle. I'll ride it out until it dies out. Like Morel, if I had him, I would have rode that out. But you get my point though. It's one of those things where I do look at it more of like a short-term thing. I'm not trying to think long-term with hitters.
I'll give a great example. I'm trying to
think longer term with pitchers than I am hitters, I guess.
100%. Pitchers, that's one of the guys I'm trying to not bury the lead of a guy I want to talk about during my ads of the week, because it might derail the whole show if I bring him up early. But it's the idea of I'm looking long-term with that pitcher. Then we're like a hitter. Like I was all over JJ Bleday like a month ago. I dropped him like 2 weeks ago. It's just like your theory of, hey, write it out, get the production, move on. You have a Brent Rooker question coming up. I actually wrote him in an article for Fantasy Pros as a faller that you can probably move on from if you want, and maybe stream again when he faces a bunch of lefties or something. Like there's scenarios, and league format's a big part of the scenario, obviously. But I agree with what Curlin's saying is pitchers, yes, you want your maybe you got a two-step guy this week. That's cool, great. But with the craziness of injuries, the craziness of like the bouncy ball, all this stuff, I'm looking long-term with pitchers. Like I'd rather look long-term than the two-start guys. If I can get a guy that I might be able to trust for the next 3 to 4 months, I'm in, compared to the guy that might just throw me next week and I cross my fingers. He only gives up like 5 runs and 2 starts and strikes out at least a batter in inning. So that's kind of where I'm at. And I'm kind of with Curlin on that, where hitters, I'm kind of just churning and churning and churning, where pitchers, I'm trying to invest in the season, if that makes sense to people. So.
Ugh, I don't know if you did you read the whole "it's the last thing you want to see" thing? Is that the quote you were looking at earlier?
There's the manager and then two players comments from Nathan Ruiz. Yeah,
I was reading "it's the last thing you want to see." We're talking about Mullins again. I know I'm harping on it, but it's fresh. It's a fresh wound. It happened like an hour before the show. So
this is great. This is Curlin in real time, folks. Usually it's the text messages we get, but you're getting them on camera.
Well, because right now I'm thinking about it, and I'm honestly digesting it, and in my head I'm already expecting the worst case scenario. I'm picturing in my head I'm dropping Mullins already, and who am I adding? Who do I have to replace him? And what can I what's my next move? And I've already added while we were talking right before we actually got into this part of the conversation, I've added 3 guys to my watch list just to see where it goes for certain stats. And so I can harp on it. I'm gonna be a little upset about it, but I'm 8th overall in the main event. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I'm at the point now where it's a third of the season's up. I can't dwell. I gotta react. I gotta move. I gotta try to get some of those stats. It is what it is. I'll figure it out. I'll make it work. Yep. It's not going to be Cedric Mullins. It's not going to be pretty, but I might have to be aggressive with certain players. We'll see. I don't know. I think I'm going to try to go the way of streaming. Maybe I'm less aggressive. Maybe I don't go big on some of these guys and just keep my fab knowing I'm going to need to rotate more players than I expected. Now that Mullins might be out, probably he could be a drop. I don't know. We'll see. Anyway, let's move forward. I'm sorry. I know people.
We're gonna adapt and move forward here. And I enjoy doing the kind of process, just open conversation stuff. We'll do that from time to time for sure, just to kind of show our process of how we do it. Maybe it'll help you. Maybe you think we're crazy. Who knows? But it is an interesting way to go about it. We'll go through some players that are having some pretty strong Mays. We have a ton of great listener questions. But one of the ones that was a listener question slash a guy that's having a good May, which is just kind of fun here, is Zach McKinstry. And Ballpark Fantasy asks, is McKinstry for real? Sure seems to be. And when you look at McKinstry, and I actually made this comment on the First Pitch Pod, is the Tigers a few years ago, they were slowly building up youth, and they were making trades and doing things. And you could see the writing on the wall in like 3 to 4 years, maybe, that they're going to be there. And I'm not saying they're there this year, but you're seeing like the dudes playing good again. You got McKinstry, Matan's having his moments. Torkelson's starting to get going. Like, there's just a slew of them. They're starting. Riley Green's, we're going to talk about him in a bit. He's heating up. Well, McKinstry in the month of May, really, really good stuff. And he's the primary leadoff hitter for them, let's put it that way, playing third base and the outfield and second base. You're going to get massive eligibility situations. But he hit 317 with 2 home runs, 6 stolen bases, 15 runs scored. And what I really love to see from someone that he is 28, so he's not super young, but a guy that's getting his first like real, real good chance of playing time, 22% walk rate and 14% strikeout rate. That's elite plate discipline. That's helping him get on base, helping him score those runs, and helping the Tigers get going for like the greens that we're talking Torkelson's to drive in runs. So what's your thoughts on McKinstry? The question was, after I blabbered on and on, is this for real? And I think there's a realness to it, to be honest.
Yeah, this would be ideal in a deeper league, a nice Mullins replacement. But again, I just have to full circle. It's all about me, Bubba. Anyway, looking at it, a lot of it seems legitimate. He's always been a really big zone contact guy. It's still in the 90% range, which is where it's been, where it was last year, and then the year before that it was also 89.7%. So 90% zone contact is where you start getting into elite territory. Single digit swing and strike rate, where league average is around 11%. And then, of course, league average O swing, which is your outside swing rate, is usually around 32-33%. His is at 26.7. So that's a little better than his usual output there. Maybe he's running hot, so he's seeing the ball so well that he's not chasing as much. But even if he was chasing league average, that's fine. I don't think he's suddenly, that's why you said there's some realness to it. I don't think McKinstry's suddenly a 295 hitter. I know he's shown it in the past at various levels of the minors and such. I do think he's going to be a decent batting average guy, though. The steals, he's 10 for 11. That's a legitimate skill. And then the double-digit walk rate, we've seen that a time or two in the past. So I think the plate discipline, there's something to it. And you mentioned he's leading off. He's actually pulling the ball in the air quite a bit. I think it's like over 50% of the balls are pulled line drive. Over 50% of his pulled balls are in line drives over 5 balls. So although the power is not a strength, it'll help the power play up. And then he's barreling the ball more than ever. McKinstry has 11.3% barrel rate. He's never been double digits before. Hard hit rate, that's where it's like it's nothing special. That's why I said the power can play up, because of his approach more so than the actual hard hit numbers. I mean, 39.2% is nothing special. I don't even think that's league average, honestly. I'd have to go look at the percentiles. I'm looking at Fangraphs right now. But McKinstry is a guy that there is some truth to it. A lot of it is that safety and the safety and the plate discipline, and then overall the fact that whole pulling the ball in the air thing, it's helping generate more barrels, and McKinstry's good. It's going to play up a little bit for McKinstry. So I do think that, like I mentioned, I think you hit it right when you said there's some legitimacy to it. I think he could be 75 to 80% of this player rest of the season if he continues this. And that's well worth, that makes him easily like a fifth outfielder in 15s, pushing that fifth outfielder spot in 12s. He's definitely 12 team relevant. Not a must add, but a guy you definitely want to make a point for if you need speed. And again, he is leading off. He is platooning, so know that he's not probably going to hit against a lot of lefties. Maybe the platoon starts lifting because he shows that he's worth trotting out there against them. But at the end of the day, McKinstry, there's a lot to like here and a lot to believe in there, given the approach.
And part of the thing is the realness comment is a lot of these guys, pretty much all of them we're going to talk about, is because they're on fire right now. And so, like, the possibility of continuing at that level, none of them are. I'll just say right now, none of them will. It's a matter of, do Kurland and I think that this guy can still be very serviceable for you the rest of the season? And I think that's where, like, McKinstry 100% like fits in at a 15. He's awesome. Like, he's really good in the 15. And I love that positional flexibility. Like, that's tremendous stuff even at 12. So he's in play for you, someone to definitely keep an eye on. I mentioned his teammate Riley Green, and this is one that stood out to me. And this is one thing where I know Curling can probably relate to this, and others can too, and most of you won't care, but we do a lot of content, and there's days we're just exhausted from doing content. It's like overwhelming at times. But in doing so much content, it brings certain players to life that you might not have been paying attention to. Like, that's how I all of a sudden got into the Tigers, because I just got down a rabbit hole of, wow, these are actually guys playing pretty good. Like, why would I ever look at the Tigers? Let's just be real. Like, but you start seeing
this. If it wasn't for the content I do for the Patreon and for the Athletic, I wouldn't have, if I didn't cover lineups, I would never look at them. Who looks at, unless you're Sporer,
Yeah.
Like Paul Sports would probably, and maybe Govier being Tigers fans, those are the only guys I know that would even know who half these guys are. That's and it would have been on them for like weeks now if it wasn't for the fact that we did content. Yes.
And that's what I'm saying. So you look at Riley Green, right? In the month of May, dude's hitting 363. Obviously, a 484 BABIP's unsustainable, but he had 13 extra base hits, 3 being home runs, 4 stolen bases. He's hitting second or third every day for the Tigers. You know, 25% K rate in this era actually isn't that bad when you look at the grand scheme of things. And, you know, a 12% barrel rate, a 52% hard hit rate. People forget last year in draft season, he was one of the shiny new toys. Then he goes and gets hurt like the last day or two before spring training ends, and he never really got it together all season. So we might be seeing another guy like a Josh Lowe, like a Jaren Duran, who's struggling now. All these kind of like post-hype guys. Riley Green could be one of them. And it's very interesting to see. He's not, again, not going to hit for this average, but the power and speed can play even in that ballpark, I think. So what's your thoughts on Riley Green?
Same idea. You mentioned it. I think the strikeouts, and the problem is it's not a passivity issue. There's some swing and miss in this game here. He's still pulling the ball so much on the ground. 72.7% pulled ground ball rate. That is horrendous. So the power won't play up to its full potential, but you mentioned it, a 52% hard hit rate, double digit barrel rate, even if it's not double digit, or sorry, it's 45.2, not 52. I apologize. The hard hit rate for what's his face here, Riley Green. But the barrel rate, even if it was last season, 9.3%, it's still in line with last year, a little better. I think Green's going to give you probably get close to a 2020 season, which is rock solid. It's just, you know, the 408 BABIP. Although last year he was a high BABIP guy. So BABIP is just maybe, I mean, there's a lot of things that it's one of those things that you're seeing kind of these high BABIPs. Like you're seeing the high BABIPs carry over 3 straight stops. 2022 in AAA, 340. 2022 in at the major league level, 354. 408 isn't going to sustain, but even if he's closer to the 350 to 340 range, it'll still help carry a 250-ish batting average, which is what we saw last year for him. So I do think, in spite of the swing and miss issues, I think the BABIP will play up, considering he's showing it to be more of a skill. And that goes back to 2021, all the way in AA. It looks like almost every year he's had a solid BABIP. Actually, every year of his career minus one stop. I'm just going down this rabbit hole. See, this is what happens. We start looking into this stuff more, right? But yeah, so the speed, he's perfect six for six. So even though he's not blazing fast, it's a skill, and he's taking advantage of the rules. I think 2015 is a fair expectation, I don't know. He's only has 5 home runs through. It's gonna be hard for him to get that 20 home runs right now, but maybe 15-15 with 15-20 upside. I don't know, just solid safe. He needs to elevate the ball more. He is a little bit. The ground ball rate is moving in the right direction, but it's still 52%. So it's not like it's moving in the right direction, but not fast enough. That's the only issue here. If he elevated the ball more, we'd see a lot more power play up at the end of the day. But he's pulling the ball on the ground as much as Riley Green is, and not elevating the ball much at all, or enough at all, I should say, will hinder that power production. But at the end of the day, I think there's a little power, a little speed, and the batting average won't be a complete liability. He's a solid, probably outfielder 3-4 range, give or take.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. Like I'm curious to see how this continues, where he's like, where we're talking about him in December.
Like, I'm just curious where the power ends up. Does he finally, like, I bet you if I look at just May, I think he started elevating the ball more in May. So that's why you mentioned May. You have to break these down. Sometimes you have to break down players in months. The month of May, his strikeout rate's down to 25.2%. Huge strides forward in strikeouts. He cut down the swing and miss. He made a lot more contact. So you're looking at the overall numbers, but is May more representative of what we're going to see going forward? And that's the question that's hard to answer. Also in May for Riley Green, 41.5% ground ball rate compared to I mentioned 52%. So imagine what it was before May. You know what I mean? It must have been horrendous. So he's making these, he's adapting in season. He's adapting this month, but is it just a hot month? We saw Mateo's a perfect example of up and down, up and down. I think Riley Green is more likely to be more constant in his production, but it's just one of those things where I'm just apprehensive. Do we buy into the small sample of May, or is there a happy medium between the two type of thing? So we'll see. Someone just hit a home run in the Twins game. Royce Lewis, of course he did. 3-run home run.
He just
jumped his fab up to about 300 right there.
Yep, he was already gonna be high, and there we go. Speaking about another player that's been just for me playing out of his gourd of late is Jose Siri. This is a guy that in draft season I was like, okay, he plays great defense, it'll keep him in the lineup every day. We'll see what he can. He's got tons of speed, but you know, that's about all you can probably expect from Jose Siri. I have him in a bunch of drafting holds. I got him in some fab recently, but not a ton of shares. His month of May hitting 262 with a 256 BABIP. Let that sink in for a second. But he has 7 home runs, 4 stolen bases, 27% strikeout rate. But the power has just been fun to watch develop from Jose Siri. 21% barrel rate, only a 36% hard hit rate. So that's not ideal, of course. But he's been playing very, very, very well and playing pretty much every single day for the best team in baseball, best offense in baseball. So what are your thoughts on Jose Siri? Like, 262 seems reasonable to me. The power is the question I have for you. Like, that's the big surprise for me.
Well, I think it was always one of those things where the power was there. He's always had those max EVs, if memory serves. So it's one of those things where he's finally looks like he's a guy that's actually the ground ball rate's 37.7%. So he's getting the ball in the air more. And that's kind of all you need to do when you hit the ball as hard as he does, right? He's pulling the ball more than ever. So I think just Siri's getting that a little bit of approach change going. So the power is finally playing up. We saw him spike a 16-24 season in AAA for Houston in 2021. We've seen double digits of both power speed outputs in the minors across his minor league career. So he finally gets a shot to really kind of start and play most days. I think the tools are very legitimate, but I do think the batting average is a huge liability. The speed will help Siri outproduce some of those, some of the strikeout issues. It'll help him produce a higher BABIP. It's only 267 right now, but I think the BABIP could rise, which could help sustain that batting average closer to 250. That it is right now. But I think the tools and what we're seeing in terms of the power, you're seeing the whole team kind of shift. The whole Rays team is shifting their approach. Tyler Wallace, remember, like, my big thing with Wallace was he wasn't putting the ball in the air enough, or the reason why the home runs played up, but you know, he didn't have the barrels at the beginning of the year, was he was pulling the ball in the air. Right now, Siri has a 34.4% pull fly ball rate, and the pull ground ball is still 53.1%, but remember, it's no Riley Green. And I bet you, and that's just this year. I bet you if I look at his career, I would almost guarantee without looking that it's up compared to his career, which I'm going to pull up right now because I'm stubborn. So his pulled fly ball, his pulled fly balls are up about 8%. So yes, he's pulling the ball in the air a lot, 8% more this year compared to his career. The pulled ground balls are about the same. But at the end of the day, pulling the ball in the air more like that, it'll help the barrels. It'll help, that approach helps barrel the ball more, which explains the barrel rate. It'll help the power play up, which could explain the home runs. And you're seeing it be a team philosophy. And the Rays run. So the speed's definitely going to be there. The Rays are letting everyone run wild. So Siri can – he's going to get his stolen bases. But I'm mostly buying in what we're seeing here. I think he's a flashy, toolsy player. Strikeouts are going to be an issue, which could lead to batting average concerns. But batting concerns be damned. You want that power and speed. And I think he's going to offer it even while batting in the bottom third of that lineup.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. It's a discussion point that I know Dirework and others in our chat has been bringing up. I think like James McCool, who's a great guy, and some other DFS guys have talked about. We used to like kind of poo-poo the bottom of the batting order, but in this new running environment, they become pretty darn valuable now. That's where Siri kind of helps flip that lineup over to the Yandy, so the Francos and company, and he's giving you plenty of fantasy goodness there. The last player I have written down here, we'll talk about more in the listener questions section later, is Lane Thomas. And this came to my light when Kirtland actually did a little video and talked about him a couple weeks ago and how he was mashing lefties and kind of hanging in there versus righties and so on and so forth. But he's actually held his own everywhere now. He's the leadoff hitter for the Nationals. In May, he's hitting 311 with 15 extra base hits, 8 of those being home runs. He scored 21 runs. The Nationals probably scored 26. Like, I'm being sarcastic, but probably not off by much. Drove in 16, 2 stolen bases. Like, he did a little bit of everything across the board. Still struck out 26%, but I'll take that if you put up numbers like that. 11% barrel, 47% hard hit rate. Lane Thomas is a guy that we've talked about in years past. Like, last year he had 17-8, hit 241. We've always had kind of expectations for Lane Thomas. It's just never come to full fruition. And then there was worries this year. You know, the team was so bad. Like, what could he possibly get out of this? Well, you know, Luis Garcia is hitting. CJ Abrams isn't horrible. Condelario's actually playing pretty well. Like, there's Meneses is hitting, just not for power. So there's a little bit of production in Washington, and that's helping Thomas as well. But what's your thoughts on Lane Thomas going forward? Because a couple weeks ago, he was still available in a lot of waiver wires. Might be on a few still if you're lucky enough to get there. What's your thoughts on Lane Thomas?
So my concerns with Lane Thomas, I still have him. I know he's serviceable against righties, but WRC plus of 90 – league average is 100 WRC plus in general, so he's 10% worse than league average against righties. He's obliterating lefties. Over 1,000 OPS against lefties, a 705 OPS against righties. So the production against righties hasn't even been there. And in May, they faced a ton of left-handed pitching, apparently. I was just curious. So I went and looked. I sorted it. They faced 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 lefties in May. So I'm wondering, was it just a heavy amount of, like, seeing all those lefties really just did it for them type of thing? I mean, they still faced almost an equal amount of righties, but how often is it an equal, how much is it a one-to-one lefty-to-righty combination in a month? So I think there is something to the fact that they faced a whole lot of lefties. Will that continue? There's no, I would say, you know, the division would help because the Marlins have a lot of lefties and all that, but that doesn't matter when the division stuff has changed, you know, towards pretty even across the board now. So I think he's going to be fine. We've seen Thomas do this. I just don't know. I think he's less believable considering the splits. It's almost like Paredes, where I have a hard time buying fully into Paredes because the playing time for it's a different conversation. It's not apple. It's more of an apples to oranges comp, but the reasons, there are some similar reasons in terms of just that struggles versus righties being a big enough concern, in my opinion, to keep me less optimistic moving forward. A guy that you're starting, adding, should have already been on your team and you're riding it out. There's no doubt about that, but I have my concerns with it sustaining.
Yep, I got you. Makes a ton of sense to me. I'm just curious. Heck of a month for Mr. Lane Thomas.
Oh, absolutely.
It'll be fun this time next month to see how Lane Thomas is doing today. So that'll be a nice roller coaster ride there. Let's talk about some fab pickups for the week here. Week 9 NFBC fab. Again, we talked 12-team OCs because 12 teams is kind of in the middle of most people play 10s and 12s, but 15s are very popular as well.
I bring up 15 stuff. Don't you worry.
Okay, good, good. So obviously, you don't. If you're living under a rock, you're the only one that doesn't know this, but the most added player this past week was Bobby Miller of the Los Angeles Dodgers, added in 204 leagues, as high as 399, as low as 12. I'd be blue in the, I feel like I'm blue in the face. I've either talked or written about Bobby Miller every day of the week, multiple times probably, in everything I do, especially talking fab and everything else. He's worth every penny. He's the guy I've wanted over Gavin Stone to begin with. Gavin Stone has made it really easy to make Bobby Miller the guy to have over Gavin Stone as well. With Dustin May out for, you know, he's not going to throw again for at least 4 to 6 weeks, like more 6 weeks. I don't think we see Dustin May until it's September, honestly, if we see him at all, because they're doing PRP injections. He's going to ramp back up in spring training style. It's going to be a while until we see Dustin May. So this is Bobby Miller's spot in the rotation, I think. That's how I feel about it. 5 innings, 1 earned, 5 Ks in Atlanta, which is outstanding. And now he pitches at home tonight. I believe it's against Washington. I could be wrong. I have to go back and look at that. It's an easy matchup compared to Atlanta. So I don't have a ton to say besides he's awesome and I think he's the way to go. So what's your thoughts on Bobby Miller?
He's this week's Yuri, this week's insert ace stud minor league pitcher here. He's that guy. I think it's that simple. Yeah, there's not really too much more I could say about it either. This year's been wild seeing these pitchers come up, and I really do wonder how much of it is that these pitchers as a whole are just so much more comfortable maybe pitching with the rules, considering they've had time to do it and all
it's
that.
It's been discussed how the minor league guys don't even realize there's a rule anymore. Like, and that's why their arms like built for it now. They're just like, this is what it is. So, a lot to be said about that. Let's look at Jake McCarthy. Was one of the top 100 draft pick in draft season, maybe top 60 in some leagues. I never bought into the price for Jake McCarthy, but we knew the speed last year. He had a heck of a year, helped people win leagues. He got added, he got sent to AAA, in AAA crushed. He got added in 158 leagues this past week, as high as 111, as low as $1 in 12s. In his time in AAA, he played 22 games, hit 333 with 4 homers and 4 steals. That obviously will play. He had if you want to get deeper into the woods here, he had a 952 OPS, a 200 ISO, only struck out 12.4% of the time of walking 10 and a half. All really, really strong things for Mr. Jake McCarthy. And since he got called back up, he has 1 hit and 1 stolen base. So what's your thoughts on Mr. McCarthy, who came up and they sent Dominic Fletcher back, who was actually still hitting the base?
Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom has created weight management programs that are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization so you can manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. And they help you understand the science behind your eating choices and why you have those cravings. Noom's personalized courses are easy to follow and will help grow your confidence with tools you can put into practice on day one. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. And based on a sample of 4,272 Noomers 98% say Noom helps change their habits and behaviors for good. So stop chasing health trends and join the millions who have lost weight with Noom. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I don't know anymore. I do think McCarthy's better than what he showed us to start the year. I don't know if we should be expecting him to suddenly figure it out because, I mean, I know he kind of went down there. That's why he came back up was because he figured it out. But McCarthy, you mentioned it. He's 1-for-9, a double, a stolen base. I think he's a good hitter still. He's gonna steal bases. He's banging at the bottom of that order, so there's very little upside there. I don't really have a whole lot. I wasn't really confident. I think there's some bias here, some personal bias, because I wasn't in on McCarthy to start the year, so I'm not surprised he's still not the guy. I wouldn't have been overly aggressive on him. He wasn't available in my league. I think he was already being stashed, but even if he was, like right now, if he was available on the waiver wire for Mullins, I'd probably take a shot at him, but I don't think I would ever bid enough to get him. I view him more as a streamer than I do as a regular piece of your lineup, which I think he's being added back to lineups as a regular piece of your lineup or expected to be one. That's where I think the difference is in my view of him and others. So McCarthy's a guy I'm still not in on, considering what I would guess the general consensus view is on him.
Yeah, I put keep him honest bids out there. I don't even know if I got him anywhere. We'll go back and check that in a little bit, but I wasn't like running to get him. I'd rather have spent $2 on Jesus Sanchez, honestly, than break the bank for Jake McCarthy. We already talked about Zach McKinstry, and obviously what we said, people didn't listen to because this was after this, but 127 leagues, as high as 127, as low as a dollar. So he was added in a ton of leagues. Another guy that was a listener question, so we'll talk about him now, is Luke Raley, fourth most added player this past week, 82 leagues, as high as 64, as low as a dollar. I've had Raley for a couple weeks in certain leagues. His May has been 286, 3 homers, 7 stolen bases. He strikes out a ton. He's going to hit for a rough average from time to time. Like, if you look at his last 2 weeks, he's got 2 of those 3 home runs, like 5 of those stolen bases, but he's hit 200. But he walks a good amount too. So it's kind of a yin and a yang with Luke Raley. The one thing I'll mention, and maybe I'm wrong because you pay way more attention to this than I do, it feels like he was in a very, very, very strict platoon at one time, where now that he's hitting so well, he's starting to get his occasional games versus lefties out there. It feels like a lot of it was because the Rays were battling injuries at the same time. But there seems to be a little less platooning in Tampa Bay outside of like your Paredes, your Walls situation. But what's your take on Luke Raley?
So, Mr. Raley, he has started against one left-handed pitcher the last 30 days. I would guess that's the one he's had all year. So the ones that you're referencing, well, it's recency bias. He started one of the last two they faced. That's what it is. And he started 5 in a row during that. So it just happens. I think that's where it was in your head. You saw, okay, he started 5 in a row, one being against a lefty. It makes sense to think that he just happened to sit against the second lefty, but now the argument is I have to go back and see what lefty it was. It was after 5 straight. He started six out of 7, so he started the next game after that against a righty, though. But Raley is a guy that he's bad. You know, he's playing every day. He's batting towards the bottom lineup right now for the Rays, but any part of the lineup you want. The fact that they started him against lefty, you mentioned it could be injury related. It could just be because he's running hot, but it's a roller coaster. It's up, down, the strikeouts are an issue. But again, a guy that you weren't expecting to run, the power has always been kind of a thing. And he has ran in the past, but I don't think anyone thought Raley was going to run, especially when we saw him not playing. Like we saw Raley hit for power early on. Okay, we could buy into that. The Rays know what they're doing when it comes to getting guys like this. That's not a surprise, but the 7 stolen bases, I think that's matching a career high at the major league level. Oh no, it's okay. So he's had nine. Oh, sorry. No, he had eight in 2021 at the major league level. It looks like no, that was in AAA. Yeah, this is a career high for him at the major league level. Sorry, he's been up and down so many times. I'm looking at his past, but rarely. So he's just career high seven stolen bases. He's 7 for 8, so he's efficient. He'll keep running probably. It's wild. Rarely is what he's doing is wild, but you ride this out. Even if he's, but it goes back to knowing the matchups, knowing what they're doing for the week. I haven't looked at the Rays that much because I don't think I have a Rays hitter that I really need to worry about. But usually they're usually good for like 5 out of 7. 4 out of 6 on a bad week against righties. And it was weird with him though. Rarely was a guy that like Walls, like Paredes was kind of falling into, they have 4 righties and they'll all play 3 out of 4 of them. And that is still very much a possibility with Rarely. So just realize that if that's happening, pay attention because there's a chance that he's going to sit against the occasional righty, even if there's a stretch of them. But at the end of the day, Rarely is a great streamer right now. A great guy. You're plugging in, you're getting power, getting speed and hoping the batting average isn't going to bury you.
Exactly. Jared Schuster added in 78 leagues, as high as 126, as low as a dollar. I was actually like, I get why people added him. The price tag made me laugh on certain ones because his 2-start was last week, not this week. So usually you see the opposite take place. His last week against Philadelphia and Seattle, 11 2/3 innings, 4 runs, 12 Ks, very, very effective. Big talk of the town in spring training. Since he came back up, he's on the 16th. He went back down for a little bit. You got Schuster has thrown. He has a 3.78 ERA, 4.87 xFIP in 16 2/3 innings, 15 Ks. He's allowed 7 runs. The walks can still be a bit of an issue for Schuster, but he was a very popular pickup this week, and it kind of felt like is either a FOMO pick for people or I'm missing something here, Curlin.
I think you might have missed his last start. I did tweet it out, and you know me, I tweet everything. So May 22nd, I tweeted this. He's due for a start. Oh, he gets Oakland this week. I know that because I have him in one league, in one DC
that's why everybody wanted him.
So that's why that's the big reason. But the last start, there was something interesting. So we saw the velo across the board tick up. I think it was close to 1 mph, if not 1 mph across the board. Cool. Great. Velo's up. We always love that. But Schuster threw a season high 34% sliders and had a 42% whiff rate on it. Great. So there's a change there. And if you look at it, it was a huge dip in 4-seamers last start, a big increase in both the changeup and slider. So he incorporated a heavier dose of the off speeds while dropping that nearly, I think it was like 45% usage on the fastball closer. He dropped like 10%. And that outing, again, one outing. So it could just be a blip on the radar or it could be a start of what he's going to try to do. But Schuster had this, made the changes with the increased velo, the change in pitch mix. This led to that had the less walks in the last outing, the most Ks in a start this year, highest swinging strike rate of the year as well in that start. The issue being for Schuster that he didn't induce a ton of chases, but there was an actual change in approach paired with that little bit of velo jump. I think that's what has people encouraged. And then obviously pair that with the Oakland start, it's kind of like, time to go back and try this again. But I that's what I noticed in his last start, and I put it out there. So I guess, I'm not the only one that feels bad. I don't feel bad anymore because I barely read anybody's work. So I know you don't read mine because I post it on Patreon. So
yeah, I read a lot. I skim a lot is what I do.
That's fair. I write a lot. It's a lot of information.
He gets Oakland this week, and then next week he gets the Mets. I'm on RotoWire, so I only got the next 2 weeks, but decent matchups. The Mets have been kind of hit and miss, but Oakland's a great, great option for sure. So we'll see how that plays out. The Braves need it. We'll talk about Soroka later. He was a listener question, but the Braves need it in a big, big way. This is a guy that, I told Bloomfield a couple weeks ago, I always think it's Blake Lively when I see the deal, but I know it's not.
Oh, absolutely.
Ben Lively, the Cincinnati Reds, added in 69 leagues. As high as $41, as low as a dollar. He's made 2 starts. He had 2 bullpen appearances. Now he's made 2 starts in the rotation, 11 2/3 innings, 5 2/3 or more in each start, 2 runs or less in each, 8 Ks in both. 3.09 ERA, 2.83 xFIP. Both of those were in Great American Small Park against the Cardinals and the Yankees. Like, that is shocker city. And then this week he's got a 2-step at Boston and then at home in Great American against the Brewers. Are you believing in this? Because I find it so hard to trust this. Like, I just can't. Great American Small Park at 8. I've talked about it with Hunter Green before his dominating start in Wrigley. His previous 4 starts, people thought he was broken. But it was 3 in Great American and 1 in Coors. He finally got out of the hellhole, and he pitched great. Like, it's amazing what happens when you get out of there. I think, Lively, kudos, I guess. but you know, only a 28% O swing doesn't like shock me. A 91% zone contact, that won't last long in Great American. So what do you see in here? Because I know I get why people picked him up, but at the same time, it's like those are two amazing starts against two decent offenses at home, and it's just crazy to see.
Yeah, and I don't know. He deserves a deeper dive than I'm able to give on the fly here. It's wild. You mentioned the swing strike rate is below league average. The chase rate is below league average, not in good ways. He's inducing a ton of contact, which isn't always a bad thing when if it's on the ground. Is his ground ball rate's 48.9%. So at least he's inducing good ground ball rates. He has a 20% home run to fly ball rate. So that hasn't bit him in the butt yet. That's the thing. 33% fly ball rate. 20% home run to fly ball rate, and you know those fly balls are going to fly. However, 2.65 ERA, the Sierra is 3.15. The XFIP, it's all there. Like the XFIP is 3.12. The XERA, which I don't even know what that does, but it's 2.51. I don't know XERA at all. But my point is all the other indicators, including the XERA, which some people mention, some people don't really care for it. The only thing high is the FIP, and that's like the one I don't look at compared to XFIP.
Yeah, I look at XFIP and Sierra. Those are the two.
Those are in line. The thing is, the K minus walk rate is good. It's not okay. It's 22.7%. I'm pretty sure league average is like 15-ish%. 14-ish%.
Anybody over 20%, you consider 20, pretty good. Yeah.
As I'm saying, 20% is like 20% is almost like that 30% CSW mark in a start. It's just kind of
20% is my Mason Dixon line. If you get above like 25, you're really good. If you're above 30, you're awesome. So that's kind of how I look at it.
That's why I'm like, okay. So I'm over here. I'm really intrigued by this. I just don't know how much I could buy into it. I don't know. You mentioned it. It's the park. The ballpark doesn't do many favors. But right now, the fact that he's limiting the hard contact the way he is, he's limiting the barrels compared to years past. But then if you go look at his four seam, where he leaves the four seamer, it's like there's a lot of plate. He's hitting a lot of the zone, not in a good way. So I don't know. I mean, the velo is, I think it's even down from last. I don't know. He's getting more extension, which helps. You know, that's okay. So he's Lively's getting a lot more extension on his pitches than he did in years past. And that could be helping with deception. So it could help. But even then, I'm not seeing it. I don't know. It feels fluky, but there are a lot of reasons to say I wouldn't stream him comfortably. I probably wouldn't stream him at all. And if I miss out, I'm fine with that. But a 31-year-old breakout pitcher, that's more rare than your 30-year-old breakout hitters these days. I don't know. And you mentioned the ballpark. I think it's a cool story.
It's a great story. And Boston's been scuffling. So that's not a bad look. Milwaukee's banged up. We'll see how it plays out.
It's at home.
Oh, I know. But his last two starts against St. Louis, New York,
a 20% home run to fly ball rate. Even when he's barely,
pick him up anywhere. I didn't even put a bid in for the guy. I'm not trying to justify it.
And 92% strand rate.
And if you really think about it,
14 BABIP. I'm gonna keep finding regression points.
The take home is he was still not added in like 150 other leagues. So we'll see how this week goes. We're not alone. Is what I'm trying to say.
The thing is, though, is if you're looking at the underlying numbers, there's a lot of reasons for optimism. I just don't believe in all the underlying numbers because of the strand rate being so high, the BABIP being so low. Those are things that are going to naturally regress. He's still giving up a ton of home runs, even while not getting hit hard. The not getting hit hard part's not going to last, I think, as pitchers get more of a look of him, or teams get more of a look at him. He has terrible fastball spin. Like, he has terrible velocity. I can't find a reason to be overly optimistic other than the underlying numbers, which is what I usually believe in for Lively. So, yeah, I don't. I think it's smoke and mirrors right now. I don't think it's where there's smoke, there's fire situation. I think this is just more of a optical illusion for Lively.
Like David Copperfield, as they'd say. The last player I want to mention for Fab before we do the listener questions, because we have a good amount of them, is Nolan Jones. And I wanted to mention him because we talked about him before the show. And it's a guy that you and I both loved in preseason. I have him on so many draft and hold teams. He's in everywhere. We'll talk about if that's good or bad in a minute. But he was picked up in 67 leagues, as high as 141, as low as a dollar. So that means he's available in a lot of places, folks. That's one thing I'll say. I joked about it when I tweeted it on Friday because they called him up before. He never played. That was fun. Well, he was in the starting lineup Friday. He's in the starting lineup Saturday. He's in the starting lineup Sunday. Batting seventh every day, playing first base. He had three hits, including a double, two RBIs, struck out nearly 42%, which is less than ideal. But it's three games. In the minor leagues, Jones was hitting 356, 12 homers, 5 stolen bases. We know the talent he has. How excited are you about this, and why is he not added in more leagues?
Well, I think it's because
the Rockies next week they're in Coors.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. You got ahead of the market. But this week they had seven games against good matchups. We're talking about the Diamondbacks, who have like mediocre pitching, and then the Royals. So I think it was the Royals was the second half series here.
Yeah, he gets Nelson, Gallen, Henry, Davies for Arizona, then Lyles, Singer, Lynch for Kansas City. That is some juicy, juicy matchups.
That's kind of the point. Like, I don't understand what there is. Now, the issue is the first game of the week against the righty, they're sitting Jones in favor of Moustakas. Are they just giving him a break? They play these games. I know they like to get Moustakas in there once every third or fourth game, it seems like. But it's just wild to me. And they did this while also having Blackman on, like, bereavement leave. Yep. So it's like they actually made a point to block him, like, multiple ways today. And that's the thing. Jones can play outfield. He's probably going to gain first base eligibility. Now, obviously, he's probably going to platoon more times than not. I'm still starting him for the week because I think he'll probably pinch it today, pinch it against the lefty this week, and then probably start two out of the last three games. That's the problem, though. He's a deep league guy. I think I got him in our OCQ, but I'm not happy about it now considering I think I overpaid. I think that was a guy that there's a little bit of a bias there because you mentioned it. We've been in on him since draft season. He's in like a few sleeper articles. He's in, I think I wrote him up like as part of my sleeper stuff for like The Athletic. I did a video for YouTube. I've been pretty vocal about being in on Nolan Jones. So but the thing is we're ahead of it for the week. I'm looking at like,
I'm looking forward to next week.
Yeah. The home, it's a full, so is it seven game slate at home or six?
It's full.
Week. I was gonna say it's a full week regardless. And that's, you start him now. If it's a full week, and it's like five lefties. Now we're like, oh crap. Well, there goes that fun. That's the thing. I haven't looked at that part of the matchups yet, but I digress. That part, it's still early in the week to look at that. But at the end of the day, I think Jones is a solid upside play, toolsy player, but they're obviously, the downside is it's the Rockies, how they treat their players, and Crone's probably due back in a couple weeks. I know Jones will get some runs, so maybe by then it'll figure itself out, especially with guys like Harold Castro and others kind of factoring in right now. I don't think that those should stop Jones. I don't know why they'd call him up, and they shouldn't call him up not to see what they got there, because Jones has lost that prospect, like that, not the pedigree, but he's lost that prospect, like allure that people have for him. So I think at the end of the day, it would be smart for the Rockies to see what they have there. I like to think the new management might be smarter, considering that look what they did with Tovar. They treated him unlike any other Rockies prospect we've seen them treat. Not that it's worked out for them, but why would they do that with him and not just give this kid a chance? And he's a lefty, so he has a chance for at least a strong side platoon too. I don't know. I'm more so frustrated given you know the way they've treated, the fact that they're sitting him already. It's not like he needs a break. They don't sit other guys. Like Ryan McMahon never sits. Well, Diaz barely sits. Profar barely sits. And they're sitting this kid on his third game. Like, okay, whatever. Do you, Rockies, do you. But, I don't even know where I'm going with this. At the end of the day, I just like the upside. I think I might just be venting at the way they're using them type of thing.
This is why I want to bring them up.
I like them.
I will say before we go to listener questions right now, Jake McCarthy in his first at bat had a 2-run single, and then he stole a base and scored a run. There goes that for everything.
Well, that happened last week. I think I poo-pooed somebody else at the end of the. I undersold McClain. I liked him, but I didn't like him enough. And I'm thinking maybe
he hit like 500 on the week and everything.
I should have been a little more optimistic. Just banking on the ballpark. I don't know. Maybe I should have been more optimistic. When it comes to rookies and general hitters, I'm a little more skeptical with rookie hitters. But because like you see what Francisco Alvarez took like a month to get going. You see Vientos is barely playing. Beatty hasn't done much, and Beatty was thought to be a really solid prospect, you know, hitter. I'm sure they'll be better, but I think there's more misses than hits with hitters, and that's why I'm like a little more tempering my expectations with the rookie hitters. But McClain's looked every bit of as advertised, so I wish I was a little more aggressive in my bids on them, because I could definitely use that type of skill set right about now, I'd say.
Yep, pretty good right now, that's for sure. So some other listener questions. We already got the Zach McKinstry one. FanDuel and Fantasy IQ asked for about Luke Raley. We talked about him a bit ago. John Russell asks, why aren't more people talking about Josh Jung? Going back and reading articles published, a lot of industry writers had written off Jung or passed up on him for the hype of Jordan Walker. Now, as we start June, is it a safe bet Jung is most teams' home run leader? I almost commented on this tweet, but I waited because I know someone on the other side of this screen has strong thoughts on Jung, and I do as well. Because we were on the same page on this whole waiting on third base window. So, John, check out our content.
So it's funny because I look back at my very first team and I remember poo-pooing it because Josh Young was my starting third baseman because I waited on third base on my very first like November draft, which is like D-Gen Central, where I'm like, all right, because I was very big on Josh Young the year before the injury happened. It was a shoulder too. Came back, slow finish, not the best, but we're a year removed where everybody was super excited to be drafting him as that, like, I think he would have been like a top 150, 200 pick that year had he not been, like, almost like the price that he was this year was the price he was supposed to have last year, maybe a little less, because I think there were some expectations for him to start in the minors. But Young was a guy that was like pushing to break camp last year. The injury set him back, missed most of the year. We all know that. So it's almost like he's fitting into that Duran, Josh Lowe mold of like post-hype prospects, but no one's talking about him. The strikeouts are still an issue, but it's weird because he's, you know, Young's never been a strikeout guy. So I'm surprised that the strikeouts are such a thing, but man, he's barreling the ball solid two straight years now, double-digit barrel rate for Josh Young. The hard hit rate is up a lot, and maybe that speaks to the health. Maybe he's able to hit the ball more because or harder because the shoulder is fully healthy. There's a lot of reasons like him. He elevates the ball a ton, only a 35.8% ground ball rate, which is something Young's always done. He's been a big fly ball hitter and line drive hitter, and those things will help the power play up. So he's barreling the ball, putting in an air ton, making league average zone contact, which is or a little less than league average, which is fine. He doesn't chase a ton, a little above average, a little worse than average, I should say, and technically a little worse average swing strike rate, but explains the strikeouts being an issue. It's not necessarily swing and miss. Like there's some passivity there, but there is swing and miss. I can't sit there and say there's not, but it's not like a huge like red flag. 12%, 13% where it was last year, and the swing strike rate being at, like I said, league average being 11%. Explains why he's having some strikeout issues. He's not chasing a whole lot. He's making decent contact, not great. So the strikeouts being there, I'm not overly concerned because I think he does enough to overcome that in terms of the production. I don't think the 358 BABIP's sustaining for Young. The batting average might be more closer to like a 250, 260. I think he's more like what we expect from Matt Chapman. And I think Matt Chapman's kind of trending back towards being Matt Chapman, considering, you know, the slow May for him. But I think Josh Young is going to be what we expect to get from Matt Chapman, to kind of like that 260 batting average. He could be pushing close to 30 home runs by the end of the season, and he's a middle order bat who's going to play every day. And that prospect pedigree, and who's to say he doesn't fix the strikeout issues? Because again, before last year, he never had them. It's never been an issue for him. The most he's ever struck out in any level was 22.6%. And he's always been a solid plate approach guy. So the fact that the strikeout prior to last year, the strikeout rate was horrendous last year, but hovering near 30% doesn't seem like his game. I don't know. Maybe I'm a little biased because I was in on him and he's producing, but he went through a cold spell and he bounced right back out of it. And he's been doing really well ever since again. So I don't know what to think about that. The strikeouts are really weird to me again, because I'm not seeing a huge red flag in any of the approach to suggest that these strikeouts are going to sustain being this high. So maybe maybe it will come down a little bit, but the BABIP is going to come with it. Yeah. Like I said, 260, if he drops 20 points of batting average while sustaining the power production, I'm okay with that. It's kind of what I signed up for.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And John, I was being sarcastic, by the way, yeah, to start out. But
I mean, to be fair, I do tweet a ton, and I do.
I'm a Curlin's boy. That's why I was like, I'm going to wait for this show on that one.
It's 1,000%. Like I put out so much. I sometimes guess some of my stuff gets overshadowed. Yeah, it's bittersweet. I put out a lot of information, but I also probably hide a lot of my information in the process of putting out so much.
Young 88 asks, Badu is a free agent in my league. What level of outfielder would you drop from Rooker to High? I drop Rooker for Badu right now.
Yeah, I think that's kind of where you're at. Yeah, because I know Rooker. Yeah. I know Rooker's. Well, the problem is Rooker was so good for such a like prolonged period, and finally came back down to earth the last couple weeks. It feels like, or at least
he's being who we thought he was.
So it's one of those things where I would still try to go a little. I mean, I don't know how much lower you have than Rooker, but I mean, like right now, I'm trying to think, Jesus Sanchez. But it's a kind of a linear move. I like both of them a lot, though. So I might bet on it. That would be more team need. Like, do I want to go for power? Do I want that batting average-ish help right now with a guy with a little more speed upside? But, yeah, I think Rooker might be the right area. I'm very apprehensive to drop Rooker considering that hot run. I feel like he can go right back on one of those, and I would hate to be like, hey, drop him just for that to happen. But I say but. That's after you, assuming you banked most of these stats already. For Rooker, I think that's a good spot. I'm trying. I'm apprehensive because if I hate it, I feel like every year if there's a handful of names where I'm like, yeah, go ahead and drop them, and they are absolute like terrible recommendations. And those are the ones you remember. You don't remember all the right stuff you get right. You always remember what you get wrong. 100%. Everybody, that's people treat you that way, but also me personally, I don't remember what I get right. I remember everything I get wrong. I'm gonna be haunted. I don't care if Morel goes 0 for the rest of the year. I'm gonna remember the 2 weeks I could have had him for that hot stretch.
All those home runs you missed.
And I'm still like top three in my league in home runs. So imagine, but imagine it plays into the, well, what if, imagine, you know, what if, that's what I think of.
Yeah, they wrote songs about that. At Bunker Posey asks, what does the Cincy infield look like rest of the season with India, Steer, Senzel, McLean, Votto, Myers, Newman, and De La Cruz, Strand on the way? I honestly, let me pull this up real quick. A person I follow tweeted this earlier today, and it actually made a lot of sense because you can move some of those guys just out of there. We don't need all those players. But he said, in reality, this is Rod at Khaki Birds on Twitter, said, first base could be Steer and CES. Second base, India, McLean. Shortstop could either be McLean or Ellie. Third base could be Steer or Ellie. And then the outfield would be Senzel, Friedel, Fraley. DH could be CES, India. So Votto's out of the picture, and that could be a real thing, actually. But there's ways that so many of those guys play in multiple positions, you can make it work.
It's so hard to see him be out of it just because Votto, that is.
When he gets back, he'll get a chance, but I think he also doesn't want to sit there and look embarrassing.
Oh, absolutely. And maybe he'll actually welcome that type of role as a older guy, younger clubhouse, like Miggy.
Yeah.
So yeah, this year I was looking, Strand and De La Cruz have both played third base this year. So they are getting reps in the minors at third base, which matters. Ellie De La Cruz, I think, comes up first because Strand is, his strikeout rate, they're both at similar strikeout rates, but right now you have to think about Ellie. I think Ellie started close to like 30 something percent. So he's down 26%. So he's just on absolute heater. It's not even fair how hot Ellie De La Cruz is, but people mentioned De La Cruz playing center. I would have been like, all right, cool. But he's never even played the outfield as far as I see in his minor league track record. So I don't think De La Cruz is going to play center field. I don't follow minor leagues as close as others. So someone mentioned that. And that's why I looked into it right now, because that's what triggered that thought. But I think ultimately we're going to see India at second. We're going to see Steer and CES first base / DH, like you mentioned. I think we're going to see McLean shortstop or third, and then De La Cruz shortstop or third. But I think that's going to be your infield and DH situation. And you mentioned it. If Votto comes back, by the time Votto comes back,
we could see guys are even around.
Well, that, or we could see someone. Yeah, exactly. I think it's going to figure itself out. Everyone's seeing McLean find success right now and assuming that everyone's going to find that level of success right away. And that's not going to be the case. There's a good chance that both those guys come up. And honestly, there's probably a better chance that both of them get sent back down in a month than both of them even being serviceable in a month. But we like to be optimistic. We like to think, well, this is, you know, these are the guys, they're all going to hit. But I think it's just one of those things where that's not always the case, and you got to understand that. But by then it'll figure itself out. But if everything clicks, I think the infield, that I think we just outlined kind of what to expect with the infield. And the outfield, I'm with you. I think it's that simple. I think it's gonna be those three, Fraley and Friedel being the two guys. Just know they're gonna platoon. Myers might factor in as a weak side platoon partner or DFA'd. I think
Myers is gone. I think he's done when he comes back from the IL.
And then Stuart Fairchild. Fairchild's been a weak side platoon bat to this point anyway. So,
yeah, it'll all work itself out. It usually does in the end. Paulie Walnuts asks, when does the Moniak hot start end, and when does Ward pick up? Okay, Moniak will definitely cool down. There's no keeping up with, the crazy BABIP and everything else. But this is a guy that I talked about last year. He actually finished the year pretty strong, for Moniak standards in a platoon situation. He was the former number one overall pick, so there's definitely talent there to be seen. I think he could make a great platoon partner with Ward, honestly, because Ward's done this before, and he's gotten hot streaks. I'm not foolish to this, but this might be more the player. Like, he might be not the hot guy, but not this guy, so a platoon might be perfect for him, and I think that's something to think about.
I still don't understand what's going on with Ward. I don't get it. The hard hit rate's right in line with last year. He is barreling the ball less. Ward is hitting more ground balls. And I think we talked about this, him getting on top of, I think his under and his over, like his top percentage, like, well, I think it might have been top, which makes sense, because if his top percentage is up, that means the ground balls are up. That could just be part of it. Maybe he's not seeing the ball as well. I don't think there's an injury there. At least last year we knew there was an injury. So when you took away the injuries, and like, that was the whole, like, I think Waxman, because he's a jerk, he likes to poke fun at everything, he's like, yeah, look at, where's all this now? Because he pulled up every tweet with everyone highlighting the same information, like, this was him after the injury, or after, he played through the injury, got healthy, look how well he finished. Ward isn't, he's 65.5% pulled ground balls right now. He's not pulling the ball in the air, which I know I harp on that a lot, but it's a really big indicator of what to expect in terms of power. And Ward just hasn't been produced. The power is not going to be there. And if you're putting the ball on the ground that much, and you're pulling the ball on the ground that much more as well, then the power really won't come. So I think it's just a matter of him getting back to elevating the ball more, and a lot can happen because Ward has a lot of the underlying stuff, like strikeout rate's still just the same. His page isn't loading for me to look at more right now, but Moniak's funny you mentioned him. He's like 0-for-8 in his last two games, so he's already kind of coming back under earth.
I think he's gonna cool down, but in the end, I think he's still serviceable, like we saw in September with the Angels. He was very, very serviceable.
Oh, yeah, I think that's the thing though. I think he's serviceable, but I don't know if he's gonna be good enough to hold back Ward if Ward can get going. That's the thing. Right. I think it's one of those things where he's holding it down for now, but we're already seeing. I mean, Moniak was coming. He cut down his strikeout rate. Moniak has, and it's down to 35%. That's cutting it down for him from where he started the first week or so. Ward is still a 91% Z contact. He is swinging outside the zone more. So I wonder if he's also just pressing. Is Ward pressing causing that? And because he's pressing, he's making contact on those same pitches he's swinging at and chasing, which is leading to more weak contact probably. So there's stuff like that to look at with Ward. It could be just approach thing. It could be like, hey, maybe, you know, give him a few games off, let him figure it out. But I don't know. There are reasons to be concerned. It's weird though, because there's not that many red flags in Ward's profile compared to your typical, like, what happened to, you know, when you ask her, like, oh, what happened to this guy? I'm not seeing as many red flags in his approach and in Ward's profile as I am your typical, like, look at like Jose Abreu for reference, you know, like a guy who just fell off out of nowhere type of thing, or at least had some, like, here's a potential for fall off. Ward didn't have that, and I still don't see it in the profile to suggest that this is going to be a sustained slump all season. But I could be wrong.
Check this out for fun. Rest of season projections. The Bat X has Ward playing 66 games, 11 homers, 3 stolen bases, hitting .268. The Bat X has Mickey Moniak playing 57 games, 9 fewer games, 9 home runs, 4 stolen bases, 2 fewer homers, 1 more stolen base, hitting .228. So basically has them platoonies the way I look at it.
Platooning and producing, like, similarly. They took the projection, cut it in half, and said, "You get this, have you get this,
you
half,
get this, basically. You get this, have fun."
Well, I think so. They're equally as confused as we are when it comes to what to expect here.
Yeah, like, I love listener questions. Keep them all coming, but there's certain things you just look at and go, "You got to see how the team plays it out."
Like, you throw your hands up in the air, and
hot streaks will cool down. It's just a matter of how far they cool down, and then, like, little tweaks, because like you said, you looked at Taylor, like, you look at Ward's stuff, and you're like, there's not a ton. Like, there's a few things, but they seem fixable.
Yeah,
so, like, that's how, what how, it is. How's fixable. This? How's this gonna be? You know, it's a long season. The guys are gonna slump. It's just natural.
When do we stop calling it a long season? I know 4 months is a long time, but I feel like we look at this game. We now here comes a tangent. Sorry, guys, but I'm looking at it like we call it a long season. We say we have a ton of time left, but I don't know about you, but these weeks fly by. Before I know it'll be Wednesday, and I'm thinking, okay, now I got to think about Thursday's changes in my lineups, and then I'm thinking about Fab starting Thursday. Like, I'm starting to make my cues on Monday, and Thursday I start forming it, and by Saturday I'm usually set and ready to go, just changing prices throughout the weekend. And I feel like before you know it, a month is gone. So it's one of those things where I understand in the grand scheme, it's a long season, but we can't keep, I feel like as a whole,
I dropped Taylor Ward. It's a long season, but I dropped him. I'm not saying that.
You're also willing to make that. If it's a mistake, you're willing to understand that it's a mistake. Yeah. You know, it is what it is, but I'm just thinking as a whole, I feel like we use it, oh, it's a long season, as a catch-all for things as an industry, not just you, me, talking about as a whole, as all of us that talk on pods. We just say, oh, it's a long season, a lot can change. I think that's obvious, and I understand that we feel the need to point that out, because in some situations it needs to be pointed out, but the season isn't that long anymore. 6 months was long, 4 months is still longer, but at halfway through the season, standings really start solidifying now and really solidify. It's really hard to, you know, make a ton of movement come July, and we're already creeping into June, and a lot's going to change, but that change has less and less effect on your rosters, I guess is what I'm getting at. So I look at it like I'm trying to play this game week by week. I'm not looking. This will help you, because you hate rest of season questions, because we talk rest of season all the time. And
I actually heard Vlad Sedler say that he hates them as well. So maybe I think
it's
better.
Because it's not just me and you complaining about it behind the scenes. How I hate rest of season questions, because I'm so focused on week to week. I would say day to day, but I don't do daily. But even if I did daily, I'm looking at it still week at a time, 2 weeks at a time, because I'm trying to win everything right now. I'm trying to do the best I can. I'm trying to build this masterpiece, and I'm trying to get as much as I can value wise out of every player, out of every move I make week by week. Trying to think long term, aggressive season. That's where it's like I feel like getting away from that is the smart way to go, because unless you're in a dynasty format, you can play for a year out, you can play for 2 years out, but in a redraft format, you're playing for the production now. Am I really going to sit on my hands on Taylor Ward in a shallower format when I can get production off the waiver wire? No. But in a deeper league, I'm definitely benching him, but I'm not starting him just because I hope it works out. Or like when Abreu's been terrible, I'm not starting him just because I think he'll get going. I'm not just using my gut for these calls. Sometimes I'll use my gut because, well, sometimes I just don't have an option. Like this week, I lost Adames. I picked up Marcano knowing Marcano only he has three lefties, so he's likely not playing against three lefties. But that was a gut move because I think he offers enough upside. And I know he pinch hits in those games. But anyway, it's a whole other discussion. We're going to get to our ads and reasons why later. But I don't know. I just think I get frustrated with the rest of season outlooks, long season talk. I think we need to be more focused on the here and now and the near future instead of always saying it's a long season, things can change. And yes, I just think maybe it's just obvious. Maybe I think we keep repeating it as because it's an obvious thing that we need to say and almost as a like a cover all reasoning behind things. But it's I think maybe it's more the rest of season outlook thing that pisses me off more than anything else. I don't know, maybe I'm just taking out my annoyance with the rest of season stuff thinking big, because it's like big picture, you want to think big picture, but in order to get to the big picture you got to think small micro moves to get to that macro move. And I think when you think long season, I think when you think, okay, it's a long season, that's how you treat your bench. Maybe you treat your stash spots. You treat your, like, you got to think like, so that's where I made this mistake thinking too short term. That's what led me to, let me not make sure I don't get 1-0 for half a week. So I made sure I had a roster spot. I made sure I had everybody covered on my bench. So I didn't take a single zero for even half a week. Meanwhile, if I did that, if I was willing to do that or take that risk to do that, at least, because it wasn't even guaranteed I would, I just made sure I didn't have the opportunity to, that risk. And that whole long-term outlook of like, oh, I'm not going to take a zero for like in week two because that could hurt me in week 18, that cost me morale because I wasn't willing to sit on him and see where it went. And that's what made me take that chance on Julian, where I ended up getting him a week early, very fortunate, because obviously it took a lot for him to get that call up. I understand that. It was luck. I'm not here to argue otherwise. But it was that mindset, that shift in mindset making me realize I can't think such big picture. I can't think such small. There's times to think small, you know, short term. There's times to think long term. And that's where I thought long term, like, all right, well, I have a spot here. I'm gonna dedicate it to stashing a player I think can be a difference maker in the future. But I still can't sit there and give it a rest of season outlook because it's frustrating. I don't know. I went off on like three different tangents in one. I'm sorry.
I'm trying to figure out where we came back to on this one.
I don't know. I forgot why the tangent even went off. It's just frustrating. I hate. Okay. At the end of the day, I hate rest of season.
Yes.
I hate rest of season rankings. I think it's player dependent, situation dependent. And I think it really just matters. Like right now, I can't sit here and think rest of season with my Mullins ad. I got to go think I'm probably playing it week to week. There's no rest of season outlook for that ad. There's nobody that's going
to. The bottom line is you want to play to win the week, not win the next 4 months this week.
If I can, I mean, but it's always going to depend on do I view like most players. The thing is, I think most players won't do that. You have to pick and choose which players you think can. That's what gets you these big bids on these starting pitchers. That's what's going to draw these big bids on Lewis this week. That's what's, you know, I mean, people are going to view these guys, and that's the appropriate time to view it. But 99% of MRIzing is not those big picture moves. It's mostly small picture. It's almost pieces of the puzzle to get to that big piece of the puzzle. Whereas Lewis has the opportunity, and I'm using Lewis because it's the obvious name. There's no secrets here. Lewis is that guy that people are going to view as, okay, this is a big piece of the puzzle. Like, I'm missing a corner piece, and that's it. You know what I mean? And that's where you got to kind of pick and choose these moves, and I think it's the appropriate time to do so. But at the end of the day, you got to – I don't know. It's frustrating. There's just more to it than – I think what triggered this whole thing was the whole long season. It's a long season thing. I'm like, is it though? It's a third.
It's a 33% season. This is where you didn't let me develop that for you. You went on your rant.
Yes, I know.
It's a long season because it is. It's 4 more months to go. Does that mean it's a long season to wait for in fantasy? No, but it is a long season. That wasn't you misinterpreted what I was saying.
It wasn't you. I think you triggered something that's been building up. Because I listen to a lot of podcasts, I listen to as many as I can, and there's a lot of great stuff out there. But there's a lot of stuff that just frustrates me because people use things as a blanket excuse or as a blanket reasoning, and you need to always give more. And it's everything is player specific, team specific, need specific. You have to understand that everything you do, and maybe I'm galaxy braining it because that's how I treat my teams. And I know the average player probably doesn't need to do the amount of thinking for a roster spot that I'm putting into it. Maybe even I don't. I can argue that maybe I'm overdoing it. Maybe I'm overthinking it. Maybe I'm overanalyzing it. I'm aware.
Not you, never.
No, me never. But at the end of the day, I also think that level of thinking and analysis is really, really valuable in certain formats. And that's why when I hear other things, they trigger me, because I'm sitting here thinking this way and maybe my way of thinking isn't correct all the time, but it triggers me when I'm thinking like this and people just kind of brush it off. And like, just kind of, again, the blanket statements drive me nuts. So anyway,
I'm gonna have to give you a comment clock, like a pitch clock. It's gonna be pretty fun here, because the Giants have scored 5 runs since you started your rant.
Amazing.
Pretty impressive. Why Are You Standing Up asks, should we add Ben Joyce now or give him an appearance or two? Ben Joyce got called up by the Angels from Double A. He was a closer in Double A, had 4 saves on the season. He also had 13 walks in 15 and 2/3 innings to go with his 24 Ks. So big strikeout arm, lots of walks and control issues. I would just sit and watch for now personally, but maybe I'm missing something, Kerwin.
I think he's the next man up if he can come up and because, you know, he showed it in spring a little bit. They sent him down for a reason, though. I know he dealt with some control issues. So Joyce is a guy that you're adding in holds leagues. I think he would, but I do think if they decide to trade Estevez for some reason come midseason, or if Estevez finds himself in some trouble, I think he earned himself a little bit of leash. So, but I think at the end of the day, that's all he is more of a handcuff, so to speak. Close your handcuff.
And then the last question is from Kid C, the Kid Canada. Willie Castro is a guy he was curious about. He's been playing a ton for Colorado. He kind of mentioned that earlier with all their injuries and situations. Played all over the outfield, some third base, some second base. Super utility type guy. Hitting .258 on the year with 4 homers, 8 stolen bases. He seemed like he'd be the quick one out if more players were to get called up, per se, or guys get healthy. But anything on Willie Castro?
I mean, after all the stuff, you know, all the kids came up and all that right now, and Castro's batting 8th today. So obviously they're not viewing, I don't think they view him as more than like, hey, look, Castro's running hot. We're going to keep trotting him out there as long as he's hitting. But I don't think maybe I'm misreading it. But when you sit there and you bring up Lewis, you bat him 5th. You bring up Kepler, you activate Kepler, you put him 6th. Castro's still, while hitting as well as he is, batting 8th. So I think that's kind of how they view him. And if you look at Castro, he's somebody you ride while he's running hot. We've seen Castro run like this before. We've seen him run pure. We've seen Castro be very, very relevant in fantasy for the power and speed. I think that's what he's doing right now. I think you kind of run with it. Again, you don't have to believe in it to run with it. The barrel rate's up, the hard hit rate's up. He's doing things right. You know, he's elevating the ball more than ever. And I love how it's like, you see my process. I kind of go down, like I go down the StatCast page. I look at the batted ball profile. I go down to the plate discipline. And I kind of do this for every single hitter. And then I kind of see where it dictates me from here. The contact rates are terrible. Swing strike rate is a mess. The chase rate is still 40%, which is awful. Again, the league average being closer to 31%. So at the end of the day, Castro's running hot. You're running with it. And once it cools down, you're probably dropping. I don't see long-term sustainability here.
Yep.
Willie Castro.
100% with you. Let's go over our fab results for the week. If you got those, Kerwin, let's see. What did you do in your main event league?
Couldn't imagine what I did. I think I mentioned it. So the big thing was, obviously, Willie Adames is out for at least the week. I figured, you know, 7 to 10 days with a concussion, you never know. So I can never say his name. So we're going to call him Marcano. First name starts with a T for the Pirates. He's been leading off. He's leading off today. So it's like, I think a 2 or 3 straight he's been leading off. We know there's a little bit of pop, a little bit of speed there. He's second shortstop and outfield eligible. I also needed outfield depth before the Mullins injury. So that was kind of one of those things where I'm like, if there's anything to this Marcano ad, he can at least be a bench option with all that eligibility. So right now he could be one of those guys that fills in the outfield when Adames returns, because that's kind of works out that way without it even meaning to. Nolan Jones, we talked about already. He was one I got him. I dropped. So I'm trying to think. I like how you add who you dropped. I dropped the players I dropped were Harold Castro this week, Garrett Cooper, which in a deeper league, a lot of people wouldn't drop him. I know he's still like 90-something% rostered in mains. I got ahead of that because I was like, he's not doing it for me. What I need from him was batting average. He's not even giving me that right now. I know he'll probably come around, but anyway, Garrett Cooper, Harold Castro, and I forgot who the other one is. I don't think it really matters. Oh, it was the guy I added last week, Derek Hall, just for the upside. I didn't have room to stash him anymore, so bye-bye. Jesus Sanchez was the third guy I added, and kind of goes back to why I added him a couple weeks ago. We talked about him on the show. We saw him putting it together. We saw Sanchez. We know the power is legitimate. We know he'll play against righties, and this is a team that's probably going to let him see if he can get going again and let him run out there. He's a guy that you're streaming off the bench with his matchups. And I mentioned it this week, Monday through Thursday, you're sitting him. Friday through Sunday, you're starting him with three righties against Oakland. Doesn't get much better than that. So Marcano for the Pirates, Jesus Sanchez and Nolan Jones are my three ads. I try to keep it cheap this week, knowing I need to save some money. We're coming down, we're coming down to about midway point of the season, and I'm fifth in my league, and I only have $406 left, so it's not a lot. Like, I know it's a lot compared to a lot of guys you hear on pods, a lot of other guys, but that's really not a lot of money at this point of the year in a typical year. I know things haven't been very typical with injuries and call-ups, but trying to play it smart, trying to keep it safe. I might have one more decent bid in me. I just don't know if I want to go that route yet, or if I want to play the let's keep it cheap for the foreseeable future and just kind of chip away at ads drops and have money left for the second half of the season.
It's okay. You want all that money for that long season ahead.
Yeah, I know. I hate you. I knew I set myself up for that, but at the same time, yeah, I know. I set myself up for that. But I think it's a catch-all, man. It's team specific. There's a lot of players.
I'm messing with you, Carlin. It's okay.
But I deserve that. I deserve that because I went on this whole diatribe about it and it ends up being like one thing instantly you make. So you mean because the season's long, right, Mike? Right?
Yep.
Well,
yep.
Like,
now, no, that you're saving it for.
I know it's a long season, but it's one of those things where I'm trying to be smart about it because we have limited funds for the remaining seasons.
Yes, remaining. Exactly.
I hate you.
All right, my ads and my three OCs for the weeks here out of JP France, who's had a mixed bag today. Up some runs, but they get the strikeouts. I've streamed him off and on this whole season because there is a lot, I think, to like about him, plus the Astros. $9 to $1 runner-up, dropped Luis Medina, who I streamed last week for a buck. Added Edward Cabrera. This one made me happy. Dropped Luis Ortiz. Added Cabrera, $7, runner-up a $6. Added Mickey Moniak just because I needed an outfielder for the week. Dropped Brenton Doyle. I had him for the Coors week. I might add him again next week. I had him for like $2 last week. Moniak, $7, runner-up $6 in this one. And then I needed some middle infield help. So, and Owen Miller, he's supposed to be day-to-day, hopefully starting on Tuesday, if not Wednesday. Owen Miller dropped Emmanuel Valdez, who is starting to become a platoon player, it looks like. $4, runner-up of $1, so not too much there. In my second OC, added Luke Raley, dropped Dominic Fletcher, who's in the minor leagues, $3, runner-up $1. Added Owen Miller, dropped Kyle Farmer, $3.0. And then here's the beginning, and I did this in a lot of leagues. I added Trevor Rogers, who's on the IL with the Marlins, dropped Luis Ortiz, $1, no runner-up bid. I added Trevor Rogers because he started his rehab assignment. They're hoping to have him back potentially next week. This is a guy that we know can be volatile, but also can be very, very good. Was showing signs earlier this year to being very good. And this is the gambling I'm talking about. I can get him for $1 right now. I can even watch his first start and not feel guilty about it. And then if this guy can be closer to the guy we think he can be compared to the gas can he was, this is a great pickup. If not, I drop him. It's very simple stuff. I had the roster spot for it. Trevor Rogers is out there. So he was an ad for me in a lot of places. Like in my final OC, Owen Miller dropped Brenton Doyle 6-0. I added Alex Wood, who actually looked pretty decent in his last start, dropped Luis Ortiz 3-0, and then added Trevor Rogers, dropped Michael King 1-0. So as you can see, just a lot of speculating, a lot of cheapies in my OCs. That was kind of the gist of the situation. I know Kerwin doesn't play TGFBI, so I'll leave that out of it. But that was another Trevor Rogers destination, like many others.
Thanks for throwing me under the bus. You want to know why I don't play it? Because I don't want to. It's honest. I told Justin this, and I respect what he does. I love it because I remember how excited I was the first year or two I played it. But every year, I tend to not give it my full attention. I tend to by July, I forget to do my weekly moves for it because I'm so focused on other leagues or other stuff. I didn't give it the proper attention I felt like is required to honestly put forth effort as an analyst. Because I think if you're representing it, obviously you're part of the industry. You want to take it serious. You want to at least give it your best effort, at least give it proper effort. And I wasn't doing that. And I was very upfront about that and honest. And it's not fair to dilute a product that I think Justin works very hard to maintain in terms of like its integrity and the reason why he's doing it. It's supposed to be inclusive. It's supposed to let everybody be introduced to this type of format. And without him, I wouldn't be playing the main event because I don't think I ever would have ventured into NFBC so quickly. So I can't sit here. I mean, I'm thankful for, and that's the reason why you should play it. An analyst should take part in it. And maybe next year I get back into it, honestly, because I'm realizing the way I'm setting up myself with my teams, I think I can honestly add it to the I wasn't sure I wasn't, because just the way it's been the last couple of years in terms of how I treated it, I didn't think I was going to be able to give it the proper attention I think it deserves if you're going to take part in it. But I think next year I can get back into it, knowing how to manage my fad time now these days.
Yep, that's fair. Totally fair. We'll wrap it up there, Curlin. Mercado just got a double for you, so you got that going.
One of my first hits of the day. My team's been ice freaking cold.
When your guy goes out pulling a groin, it makes it tough to play the rest of the day. What are your final thoughts on the week here as we wrap up another episode of great, great process, philosophy, player discussion episode?
I'm going to just keep obsessing over my overall rank, obsessing over Mullins' injury replacements, and obsessing over my second half drafts. I'm in my third one tonight, so.
Yeah, go get Logan Gilbert in the fourth round, everybody.
Every time. Every single time, man. I'm telling you, he's my guy. We could talk about some of that ADP next week if you're not going to talk about that.
We'll do that next week, because I'll save the secret that you put in the chat of who you're comparing Logan Gilbert to next season. I'll let you expose that one. That's not for me to say, but it's a bold claim, folks.
I think he's going to be next season's.
And that'll do it, folks. This was Benched with Bubba, episode 591. Catch y'all next time.
Way to win up to 25 times your money this football season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of statistics, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and an enormous selection of players and stat options are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million football fans who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/get100. And use code GET100. That's code GET100 at prizepicks.com/get100 for a first deposit match up to $100. PrizePicks, daily fantasy sports made easy.